Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. I'm your host, Scott Colnut, and with me today is Niall Collini-Taylor, Head of Creative Production at Q. And we're going to be discussing focusing on concept before content in podcasting. Everything that you do before you launch, before you even think about launching a podcast, we'll be talking about those things that you should prepare today. And so, Niall, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners and describe a little bit more about what you do at Q?
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott, for having me on, firstly. My name is Niall, and I am the Head of Creative Productions at Q Podcasts. Essentially, what Q Podcasts is, we are a full-service podcast production agency. We work with brands, publications, networks on commissions for originals to create essentially creatively thought-first podcasting. And what we mean by that is that we want to be involved everywhere from the very early doors of the creative concept ideation stages. We want to make sure that we work with brands that are willing to take kind of bold steps and kind of do things a little bit differently when it comes to podcasting. I'm not saying kind of rework the wheel, essentially. It's just making sure that we use the podcasting space as best possible and how we can reach those audiences. So we cater to, like I said, all those different brands everywhere from the pre-production stages through to production, whether we're recording remotely or in studio. And then, of course, all the post-production stage as well and marketing. So we want to make sure your podcast does get heard if you go to the bother of actually trying to make one. So yeah, that's Q Podcast in a sense. So we've also got a few other companies that we work with. We've also got a few other companies that we own. One is podcast.co. That's the podcast hosting and distribution service platform. We've got radio.co, which is for live online audio. And then matchmaker.fm, that if anyone is interested to being a guest on a podcast or finding guests for their own podcast, that's where they'd go, is matchmaker.fm. It's sort of like the social media platform for podcasters.
And I am a big advocate for podcast.co. It's where I launched my secondary podcast, The Advertising Hour. It's my personal podcast. And matchmaker.fm, where I'm a founding member, and I really enjoy being a part of that too. So
excellent. So yeah. Not an unbiased approach to both of us here.
Well, I'm not involved in radio, in radio.fm yet either. Or Radio Co, is it?
Radio.co, yeah. So once you start up that online midnight hour radio station, Scott, you can get in touch with us. We'll look after you.
Yeah, thanks. So you talked about the range of businesses that you work with there, and I'm really curious. I assume that you get people contacting you for a wide variety of reasons, but I'm really curious to know, you're on the end of these questions, what people want to achieve with podcasting. So what are people telling you at the moment when they come to you?
Yeah, look, it's a very varied approach that we have from clients. Podcasting, obviously, it's been around for some time now, but not every brand has been on board yet, and they're still kind of exploring the stage. You know, if you think about it as part of any other kind of, especially from a brand's point of view, another tool for their marketing strategy plan, podcasting is still a little bit down the list from the traditional medium. So when these brands approach us, or we approach them about podcasting, they really just want reassurance as to how this will work, how they'll reach their audiences, and also a bit of a guarantee in terms of people actually listening to the show, which is obviously one of the hardest things to guarantee, because podcasting is a little bit different to, like I said, radio or advertising on television, for example.
That's really interesting that the one of the questions that you get first or most frequently is logistics, as in, it's not something that even comes to mind for me, but I'm remembering back when I started podcasting, I had lots of questions and there was lots of time spent on YouTube and actually some of the podcast.co courses and I think a book that James has released there. But I was talking to one, I've been speaking actually today about a client that was interested in podcasting and they just don't really know where to start. And there's this governance issue where in this particular organization, nobody really knows who would be responsible for podcasting. And so the logistics question actually has come up for me and it's something that I'd forgotten. Who is best placed typically in the companies that you work with? Which departments does podcasting typically sit in?
Yeah, so generally we find people who work in marketing departments or communications departments. So there is also kind of two ways that brands will approach podcasting to come to us. And one of them obviously is the traditional, as we'd say, kind of the outwards, so it's the outwards approach to podcasting, where you're creating a show to reach different audiences or a specific type of audience to build brand awareness. And then also there's what we'd call private podcasting or internal podcasting. And this is where large organizations and the people within that company usually work from the internal communications team. They'll approach us wanting to do a podcast for their staff that maybe are, you know, globally positioned in different locations. And they want to create content for them to either keep them up to date with the company's going ons, or just also another use to kind of create content for their team members, essentially. So yeah, it does vary. I'd say traditionally it is people within the marketing and content teams that we tend to speak with most.
I assume that you're always looking for someone on the other end though that's enthusiastic about podcasting, that's putting their hands up and say, hey, I want to work with Q on this project. Because it's really difficult, I think, to make podcasting work if you don't have people either on the mic or behind the mic that aren't actually enthusiastic about the medium. So is that something that you often, when you're going through this process of teaching people, understanding logistics with the company, what is it that you're looking out for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, I do calls kind of day in, day out with different brands. And often sometimes you'll be speaking to people that they've already decided upon an idea, or they have, as you mentioned, someone who loves podcasts and has done it maybe at a previous company, or they might do it themselves in their own kind of as a pastime. And to convert them, it's very simple, because you can share ideas that gets them excited and they know how it will work. But then when you speak to people who, for example, have never done a podcast or might not traditionally listen to them day to day, and they might be very skeptical about how the logistics work, what my job is to do on that call is to get them excited. So I try my best to share, you know, creative ideas that they can use to kind of stand out from the crowd, or how podcasting can be, like I said, a separate tool for them to reach new audiences or to speak to their audience directly. So really, for me, it's just trying to get them excited as much as possible about the type of work they can create. I think a lot of people who don't understand the medium see it very black and white in terms of, oh, it's that thing that, you know, you create a show and you do an interview and it's 60 minutes long and you release it and that's it. And that, you know, you talk about your brand for, you know, 40 of those minutes and then you interview the guests for 20. And I think that's sometimes they can't get their head around how it can be done differently, or even how a brand can position itself with an idea instead of its own kind of brand image. So for example, creating a piece of work where it might not, you know, the podcast might not focus solely on the business and their kind of their business goals and their messaging. But if the content is successful and works right and garners an audience and you're associated with that, then that has extremely positive results for the brand. You know, it's very much similar how you'd see, you know, the likes of brands sponsoring YouTube channels or even nowadays like TikTok artists. You know, you want brand association with positive work and content.
And do you have a preference as to whether, is your preference to work with brands that already have an idea of the types of podcasts they want to create? Or do you actually prefer working with a little bit of a blank canvas?
I suppose I, from my background, I like the blank canvas, right? Because I have a background in kind of the creative industry. So I very much try and do the whole creative led sell. So yeah. I love developing ideas for brands and thinking how we can take their kind of traditional messaging and then associate that with a piece of content that's quite different. So for example, if you're like a dating app or something like that there, you know, how can we do a podcast that is very different and unique to anything out there? So maybe that's creating the first podcast blind dating show, something like that. You know, just something that is worthy of people's attention, that can garner, you know, big results from wide audiences, that is generally entertaining. And just obviously then, you know, that's associated with the brand. So they're kind of pushing this type of content. Obviously, when we work with brands that already have an idea, it can be tricky, but also, you know, a lot of them can come with very strong ideas. They have great teams internally. Probably the difficulty that I would have in my team is that when a brand approaches us with, you know, for example, they say, we want to do this podcast, it's about our business and brand. Like I said, I don't want to name anyone just in case people are listening, but, you know, if they approach saying, this is our business and brand, and we want, this is the message we want to do, it's going to be hosted by our CEO, it's going to interview other people within our business, and that's what we think is going to work to, say, bring in new business or bring in new audiences to our services. And for us, we have to try and push back. And that's where it's a little bit tricky for us. You know, we want to make sure that we're respecting the client and that we can obtain the work, but also we want to be honest with them and transparent and tell them, look, this won't work. Or, you know, you'll end up doing, which you'll see all the time, you'll do 5 or 6 episodes, you won't get the results you wanted, and then you'll give up and move on. And it's almost a bit of a waste of time and a waste of money at the end of the day instead, where you could, you know, strip stuff and back and let us kind of take charge in terms of that creative ideation stage, work with your team as well to make sure you're getting the best possible content from this podcast series that will, of course, then, you know, over time build up an audience and build a community around the show, which then will in turn be positive for your brand. So, you know, I think that's it's tricky on both sides. Like I said, the blank canvas, great, it's exciting. The tough part is to, you know, just convince them that they want the podcast in the end because they've never done before. Obviously, a brand comes in with an idea, great. They're already kind of half their way there to sign off a production, which is brilliant. But we got to maybe just make sure that they're doing it for the right reasons and they're not just doing it for the sake of it, because podcast is quite the buzzy word now.
The right reasons. That's what I want to get into. So I want to get into that creative-led approach, those abstract waters, and understand a little bit more about what creativity is to you in the podcasting world. So we talked a little bit about like logistics, and we talked a little bit about who might take responsibility for podcasting. But even before we take those steps, I assume there are questions you ask prospects and clients just to help them conceptualize, help them with that creation, that creativity stage. So talk me through that process. Do you have frameworks that help you? How do you approach it?
Yeah, like I said, it's very much down to having those kind of creative kickoff calls with the client and asking the right questions. For me personally, I always find discovering who their audience is one of the most vital pieces of information, because from that, we can distill down to what that group of people want to listen to. We can look and see what is already out there. What are they already listening to? What is, you know, if it's a condensed marketplace where, you know, there's too many of these type of shows, can we think of something that gives them the same content, the same information, but in a different manner? You know, whether that be, for example, just essentially what we're trying to do is just let them to think a bit differently about how they can do the podcast. So, like I said, it's mainly comes down to the questions we ask them at the beginning. We want to ask them, you know, about their audience, the type of people they're trying to reach. Ask them, you know, what's mainly important too is why are they trying to reach this audience? What is the message they want to get across? With podcasting, for me, I think it's an amazing brand awareness tool. It's an amazing way to build a community of people around your brand or your brand's voice and have them, you know, give trust in that. With podcasting, you know, you have this amount of time, this, you know, whether it be 30, 20, 40, 50, 60 minutes to have your brand's voice represented. And that's very unique. You don't usually get that in any kind of marketing, whether, like I said, be traditional advertising on television or on a radio show. You don't have that a lot amount of time. So making sure that the person who is hosting your show and the concept and the creative that they're presenting is in tune with your brand's voice. So the way we would look at that is, like I said, we ask those questions at the beginning. We have a fantastic team of producers and creatives who will spend time researching in that area. For example, you know, what is currently out there, what shows are successful, and what's mainly the main point is what's missing, what's that gap. Podcasting has become very popular, so obviously there's a lot of shows, there's a lot of formats and types of show that are very similar, and they're offering the same type of information. I mean, you only have to look to, I don't know if you know, if you're a fan of American comedy, there's the kind of the LA comedy scene. And for example, yeah, every podcaster out there, or every comedian, sorry, just does the same kind of churn of podcast shows every week, week in, week out. So you end up just hearing the same stories, the same bits, and it becomes this very just plain and boring after a while, because you're not excited to hear anything new, you know. So we want to make sure we're not just replicating what's already out there. And like I said, that's when we always look to different forms as well. So when it comes to the type of shows, you know, there's with audio, you can do amazing things. It's one of those spaces that you have a lot of creative freedom, whether that's through immersive audio, whether it's through the use of kind of creating different worlds through sound design and space. And of course, then being able to create these beautifully narrative-led shows with primarily smaller budgets than compared to, say, a large documentary series. You know, during the pandemic, we all realized how, not easy, but how transferable going online was, especially from the podcasting world. We were able to do interviews with people based in America, India, Australia, very, very quickly and very, very easily. So it allowed us to, instead of having to travel to these locations, set up a microphone, do an interview and fly back, now we could just jump on a call and within 20 minutes, we've got this fantastic story recorded that we can then, you know, digest or ingest into a different podcast. So yeah, sorry, I rambled quite a bit there, but to answer your question, we essentially want to make sure that we're just asking the right questions so we can get the right amount of information at the beginning. And like I said, what we tend to always do is we go off, we develop these ideas, and then we pitch them back to the client, because what we really want the client to do is to hear an idea that excites them. Because if it excites them, then they're fully invested in the project, and they give us our, you know, then they have trust in us to do that job. Whereas if we just kind of ask them to, you know, come up with an idea to ourselves, they're more and more likely to less give over that kind of power to us, or less likely to take our feedback on board. And that's where we kind of really relish with kind of wanting to make sure we push our creative first, essentially.
And from Q's end, is it just you in those calls with prospects or clients, or do your entire teams get involved? And how many parties from the other side typically get involved?
Yeah, so it varies. I mean, generally, we're always speaking on the client side of things. It's usually, like I said, the team behind it. So if it's their brand marketing team, or if it's their internal communications team, it's usually them, myself, another producer, and our my colleague David, who's our head of partnerships. And then once the client shows interest that they'd like to take the next step forward, that's when we do what you call maybe a creative kickoff call. And that's where myself and a number of the producers would jump on a call with their team and take that brief, and then, you know, spend an hour talking to them about, you know, the reasons behind wanting to do a podcast and the achievements they would like to reach with this type of show. And those are the kind of calls that really we get the ball rolling, because we, you know, like we say, we always want to collaborate with our clients, make them feel involved in the project as well. So when we do these kickoff calls, we're collaborating ideas with them. You know, we're kind of doing some live pitching in those calls and seeing if that, you know, do they think this would work, or how about approaching it this way? Same thing goes for, you know, if it's a brand and we want to maybe include an external host to have kind of a non-biased opinion on the podcast. You know, that's when we'll kind of spitball ideas around who we think would work and who we've worked with before. And their type of voice would match up really well with the brand's message, because one, they might have a massive interest in, say, finance, for example, if that's it. So those are the kind of exciting parts of the project, especially at the beginning, is when we jump on those calls and we start to kind of work with the client. And that's what we always try and do. And we always say that as well when we work with clients, is that we want to feel collaborative. We want them to feel like we're working on this together. You know, their ideas are just as important as our ideas, and their input's just as important as our input. So it's definitely a two-way street when it comes to the project.
And remote collaboration and its impact on creativity is such a hot topic right now. I can't help but ask you, just as a head of creative production, you must have seen the articles at the moment, the reports, the studies into creativity for remote workers and remote agencies. What are your thoughts on how creativity is impacted by remote work? Have you found your workflow impacted by any of this? Do you work remotely? Do you have a preference?
I do work remotely. And to be honest, I do think it's a really interesting topic of discussion, to be honest, because I find there is benefits and negatives to it, obviously. So I've worked within the kind of creative industries in different agencies for the past 6 or 7 years, or maybe more actually now that I think about it. But so I've been part of agencies where we used to have regular kind of creative brainstorms where we go into an office or a meeting room and we'd spend hours sticking up post-it notes on the wall with different ideas, and we'd be, we could be 8 or 10 of us in there kind of talking over ideas, and we'd come out at the end sometimes with fantastic pieces of work that we'd go off and we kind of write up and adjust. And other times it would just be absolute nonsense and we would get nowhere, and it'd be kind of almost, that was the hit or miss thing within the creative agencies. I personally always worked really well when it came to developing ideas on my own. And how I like to work is I like to develop some ideas and concepts, and then I like to share them with people to get their feedback. So for me personally, and I do work remotely, and a lot of our team work remotely, but we also go into the office. I personally like to, you know, if I could go for a walk in the park and I'm thinking about the idea, and I'll take out my phone, I'll jot down a voice note, and then I'll go back, think over it, work on it, and then I'll share it with the team. And then together we'll jump on a quick call and we'll go over it. So in terms of working remotely, I do think there's a negative in the sense that you can't just turn around to your colleague and say, hey, what do you think about this? And that kind of ease of access of just spitballing ideas back and forth in the office. But with the handiness of whether it be Zoom, Google Meets, or whatever the other ones are, you know, you can really just jump on a call in seconds. You know, we're constantly chatting through our kind of internal chat network, essentially. And we can jump on very quickly onto a video call and just talk out the idea. So I do think there's definitely, I think it might affect other people more. Personally, for myself, I don't mind it too much because, like I said, I kind of like to work on my own and kind of work up my own ideas by myself. And then I like to take them to the group and see what they think, and then go back and work again. But I do know some people like to work more collaboratively in terms of developing ideas, and that's, and for them, I'm sure it's that kind of hindrance of not having that person, like I said, to quickly turn around to and say, oh, can we, you know, discuss this brief I'm working on.
I'm a report skeptic. So when reports are released about things like productivity from working from home, I just look at it and think, well, everyone's got a goal, right? So whoever produced the report, what's their goal? Because you can always spin data to tell the story that you want it to tell. And ultimately, with creativity, it's so subjective that, I mean, I agree with you in principle, it's everyone approaches it differently. I think I'm a character or have characteristics that are very similar to yours, Niall, and that I really like my own company. I find I'm at my most creative when I'm on my own. I don't need to be around people for that kind of creative energy. Doesn't mean that I don't like working with people in those kind of environments, but I feel no different from working from home. That said, I work with people on my team who have expressed a difficulty in working on creative endeavors alone. And so it really just is such a subjective matter. But one thing that I think is true for everyone is that everyone's going to have to adapt. It's a new type of creativity, a new type of working. And whether it's to your benefit, again, there are going to be pros and cons. And if it's not to your taste, or it doesn't suit your characteristics, there are going to be pros and cons there as well. I am interested, though, when you bring people together, a little bit about your workflow, in particular, that research and brainstorming process. Do you use any tools to help you with the curation of podcasts, ideas, anything that comes to mind that just helps you with that collaboration online?
I suppose not so much. I mean, in terms of, everyone's a little bit different. Like I said, you know, in terms of research, I was just actually going to mention, point out the fact that, you know, in terms of the way we do things and the creative brainstorming stages, it's never been easier for us to kind of do that research. We've got computers of high-end internet speed and on our phone at any moment. So like I said, if I'm in the park and I'm thinking about a certain idea or a certain person for a concept, I can quickly Google and find out that way. So what we tend to do is we do look at trends. You know, places like Twitter and social media are fantastic places to see what is popular, and you can find amazing stories from there. You can, you know, from those stories, you can see if you can twist it into a concept. And also, I used to be quite grumpy old man around the whole, you know, social media of TikTok and YouTubers. But really, if you look to them in terms of the creativity they have in terms of developing new formats and types of shows and seeing what is popular and how people can engage with content, maybe on a shorter scale, but also then some of the formats work much longer. So it's, I think in terms of how we research and we work together, like I said, we generally do that by ourselves. We do our kind of own field work, essentially, and then we come together to kind of share ideas. And we like to do that in a group where we'll especially if we're in person, we can pitch our ideas to each other. And from that point, you know, often until you say it out loud, you know, you hold the piece of paper in your hand and you read it out loud, it sometimes doesn't, you don't see the flaws in it. And then people can pin those out and say, well, actually, that idea might not work because A, B, and C, or that person actually maybe has done something bad in the past, so you don't want to be associated with them. So it all really just comes down to, I suppose, how people kind of like to work. We, like I said, people are individual and people research different ways, but we just make sure that we constantly kind of share whatever we come across, because one person's bit of information or news story can spark off an idea for someone else. And like I said, that's how we work very much in our brainstorming sessions as well. You know, for one person, it might mean nothing, and the other person, it might spark a bit of inspiration.
I'm so glad as well, as you were talking, you mentioned the LA comedy scene, because, well, firstly, I'm a comedy fan. It's worth knowing that.
Yeah.
And it's not really come up on the podcast too much, but I've studied podcasting for a long time and I've enjoyed comedy. And so those two things combined, and I saw, I've talked on this podcast before about podcasting going through peaks and troughs over the last 15, 20 years. And I feel like the LA comedy scene was a big contributor to this current boom that we've seen in podcasting over the last few years. However, I've also acknowledged what you said about how it's really impacted creativity and potentially just the people going on each other's podcasts and telling the same stories. Is really, it feels like it's opened up the floor to new formats, and that maybe audiences are getting bored with that kind of format, particularly in that space. I'm just really curious to know, because I've not spoken to anyone on this podcast about this. Have you seen any data or trends that correlate with what I'm saying there? Are you seeing people lose interest in those LA comedy podcasts, and that also allowing there to be more opportunity that listeners are looking for different types of formats?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anything in terms of solid data or research, right, but just being a fan like yourself of comedy and podcasts, and I do find the whole LA comedy podcast scene very interesting. There's a few shows that I enjoy and I've been following for a couple of years, and then there's a number of other shows that I've listened to mainly because, like I said, this same format of one or two comedians, you know, they're friends, they do a podcast together, they interview other podcasters, other comedians. And we see it kind of constantly evolving, where then one comedian from that show will go to another show, another comedian interview other comedians. And it's the same sponsors are attached to them, and it's just this kind of big circle. And it really has, I think, took a bit of the sting out of that format. Whereas, you know, the likes of, say, for our example over here of the UK side, you have people like Adam Buxton, you know, who's a bit of a kind of comedy, well, he's been around for what, maybe 8 or so years? I'm trying to think. I was listening to him back in 2012 or 2011. So yeah, God, nearly 10 years now. But that format of comedian interviews guest has traditionally always done really well, UK or US. And, you know, even if a brand is wanting to get into podcasting in a kind of a non-branded way, they would get a comedian to host their podcast, and that comedian would interview whoever it was in the industry that they're after about whatever. And that would tend to work really well. You know, and like I said, there's some great shows. So there's a very interesting podcast called 929 that the company Fiverr do. And essentially, the podcast itself is speaking to business leaders, entrepreneurs, essentially find out how they became successful. Fiverr is a platform for people to find jobs and for entrepreneurs to kind of sell their services. And what they do is they do it in 9 minutes, 29 seconds. There's no real reason why it's 9 minutes, 29 seconds, but I think it just, they did it because it sounds well. But also then they have a comedian host, Ishan Akbar, who's a great host, very funny comedian. And I suppose just having those two combines of, you know, business, thought leadership, but then with a comedic twist, works well. And it's been very successful. You know, it's done very well. I think it's still going in its kind of fourth or fifth season. And it just kind of goes to show that kind of combination of comedian plus subject matter tends to do well. But going back to what we're originally saying, I do think that trend of kind of the LA comedy scene, and, you know, it can be seen in the UK as well, where comedians do comedic podcasts with each other, is kind of getting a bit stale. And I think, you know, you have to look at other ways to kind of do these, I suppose, these rambling interviews and kind of freestyle interviews. But then there is podcasters, you know, for example, the one that speaks to mind is John Robbins. He's a UK comedian called, and he does a podcast called The Moon Underwater. And this is a podcast where he interviews different guests each episode, but they have to describe their ideal pub. John Robbins is a big pub fan. He loves pub culture. So the guests come in and you get to hear these celebrities come in and describe their favorite kind of pubs, down to the lighting, to the drinks that are served, to the music that's played, to the carpet. So not only am I getting to learn a little bit more about the guest in a different manner, you know, it's done in a more fun and playful way. And they use lovely bits of sound design and music to kind of help tell these, you know, interesting interviews. And I think that's the way people have to kind of approach the kind of comedy podcast scene. I think it's just, it's like I say, with the LA scene, we can probably name a few, but you know, it's very weirdly ancestral.
I'm scared of naming LA comics and podcasts because of what's happening in that world at the moment. So
well, you probably follow the same ones I do, because if you go on Reddit, it's very interesting to follow these different shows and the different hosts that are doing different things. I can just tell, you know, if people don't understand what we're talking about, I'm sure if they go onto a few Reddit forums about LA comedy podcasts, they'll be quickly caught up.
I could easily get distracted by that today, but I won't.
Yeah, we best keep it back about the business.
But seeing as you're talking about it, that's I think what's standing out to me as you're talking this through, the Fiverr example there, I can't remember the comedian's name, but the UK comedian
John Robbins,
is that podcasting is still in its relative infancy, and so there's lots of opportunity to take these bigger concepts, industries, and break them down into creative formats. There's still so much opportunity that I see out there to make that happen. But it leads me to my next question. Again, we talked about logistics and some of the questions you ask. The big question that I kind of haven't asked is about budget. So I'm really interested to know, it's not always the case that the more creative you are, the more budget that you need. But when you're talking about, you mentioned that did you say John Robbins?
John Robbins, yes.
I think you said his podcast maybe has sound effects and live production and stuff like that.
Yes.
But then you are talking producer costs and maybe extra editing, and these costs do add up. The question that I really want to know is, when people are coming to you at the moment and they're requesting your services, are podcasting budgets typically realistic, not realistic? What do you find?
It's a mixed bag in terms of formats. You know, like I said, it does range. So you can have your, you know, in studio or remote one-on-one interview podcast, and that can be, let's, for example, your kind of starting point of where podcast pricing begins. We ourselves kind of do everything concept depending for our cost. So like I said, as you mentioned, that could include, if that show then includes multiple interviews or using archive footage to help tell the kind of interview, or music composition or sound design, you know, obviously that just adds in those little extra, because it's just down to hours. You could be doing a show that is, I suppose, like a narrative led podcast. We did one with the brand called The Stack, and they wanted to create a podcast mini series that was around the sort of the crisis that's happening with mothers and childcare within the UK. And that was called The First 3 Years. And we created that podcast. And that's, like I said, I think over 4 episodes, there must have been something like 30 different interviews. And obviously they had to be all cut together, and they had to be scripted out and told through a narrative-led way with a fantastic host we had, a journalist. So obviously the costs for that are much, much more, because once again, it just goes into the hours and the months it can take to create those.
Are you able to be more creative when working with seasonal-based podcasts, because you have that break in between that allows you time to kind of listen, reflect, do more research, and kind of iteratively improve the process? Whereas it's quite difficult to do that if you have a consistent, you know, weekly, daily podcast. Do you have a preference?
Yeah. So I think there's definitely two ways that we do tend to do a lot more evergreen type podcasts. So meaning that we can break them up into series. And like you said, it gives us a lot more time to do those kind of pre-production kind of research and building the idea and scripting those shows out. I don't really have a preference, because I think every show is a little bit different. If your show is a weekly, for example, we do a podcast with a SailGP. It's a big kind of global sailing competition. And, you know, we need to do a show that is based on the result of each race and the upcoming races. And it's, you know, it's a bit more faster. It's a bit more energetic and it's got lots of features and we use lots of clips from the races. And we have lots of guest interviews from the different drivers of the boats and the sail ships. So for that, it's more about just kind of getting as much information into a show in a fun and engaging way and trying to communicate with the audience and have them involved. Whereas something that is maybe more series based, as you mentioned, yeah, we do have more time and we can bulk record episodes and we can spend a lot more time in the post-production stage, which I like. So like that kind of making sure that, for example, you know, if an interview does involve using kind of footage to kind of help tell the story, or like we said, a bit of sound design just to make it a bit more engaging for a listener, that gives us that time to work on it. So I suppose I personally probably like the kind of breaking it up into series, because like you mentioned, it just gives us that more time to, that more flexibility, and there's less of a rush. You know, I think everyone wants to have that kind of comfort in working on a project. It's all down to what the show is needed. So if it's an evergreen show, you know, that will give us more time to create it. And if it's more time consistent with the news or with a sport, then obviously you're a bit more kind of held to those dates and times.
If you're working with a popular brand and you're going through this ideation phase, do you ever look to that brand's existing customers for ideas? So do you ever survey them? Ask them for their thoughts on what they'd like to hear in a podcast?
Do you want to? No, I haven't. And I think that's actually, it's a great idea. I mean, what we tend to do is we look at the trends that their audience are engaging with, but actually being direct to them and asking them what they would like to hear. That is a great way. What we tend to do is we'll do that by midway through a series. So what we like to do is we want to obviously have the listeners engage as much as possible with the show that the brand is creating. So generally, you know, if we're kind of 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes in, we'll start to include messages and reaching out to the audience to get them to engage, whether that's send their messages in, send their feedback in, and trying any kind of fun and quirky way we can to get them to engage, because this is where podcasting works great. I mean, you know, even now I've got my headphones on, I'm speaking to you, but most podcast listeners, I think it's usually kind of in the 75 to 85% range, listen to podcasts with headphones on. Mm. So you're very much in their headspace. And by that, I mean, you know, it's a sensitive place. You don't want to be disruptive. You want to be a calming presence. I think the podcaster Blind Boy and the comedian, he has a great word for it. He says he wants to give a podcast hug. So he wants to make sure that space is nice and safe and soft, and he's talking to them in a manner that doesn't disrupt their day. So when you are in their headspace, you want to make sure that you're connecting with them. And that's why people engage and they connect with podcasts so much. So when you do listen to a show, you feel like you're almost part of that community. There's a number of shows I listen to, and I have been for years, and I feel, you know, even though I'm listening by myself, you know, I love when I meet someone else who listens to the same show. It's why if you go on Reddit forums or Facebook groups, you'll see, you know, there's thousands of different groups for different podcasts, and people love to go on there and discuss things, and they become friends online, and then sometimes they even become friends offline, and relationships can develop. And that is because, you know, it's quite funny because you're going from something where you're listening by yourself to now being part of a group and part of a community. And when I tell brands that one of the strongest suits of podcasting is that you can build this community around your brand. That's what we're trying to convince them of doing, you know, and that also takes longevity. You got to be committed to podcasts, and you want to make sure that if you do want that and you want that goal and you want to achieve it, that can take some time. You know, you can't do that in 5 episodes or 10 episodes. You've got to do it over time, be consistent, you know. It's just like when we look at people's analytics and their stats, you know, what we're really looking for is consistency with listenerships. Obviously, we want to go up like a ladder, but we want to make sure that we're not losing that audience, that we're being quite consistent across the board.
And you mentioned that maybe, particularly if you're running a season that's 10 episodes long, you might check in halfway through and try and engage an audience to prompt some kind of feedback. Have you found any particular tactics that work better than others for prompting feedback from listeners?
One way that audiences respond well to is actually having their questions heard, you know, read out and mentioned online. there's a radio show, but their show also is repurposed into a podcast and has been for, I think, the 6 years they've been going. It's called the Elton John Show. It's currently on BBC Five Live, but it has a huge podcast audience. So by that, I mean, a vast majority will listen to the podcast and not the radio show, or they'll do both, but they still have a huge audience on the podcast side of things. And they always open up the start of their podcast. This is not part of the radio show part, with where they read out listeners' emails and texts and the different kind of queries they might have or issues that's going on in their life. And the two hosts and the producer, they've built this really quite beautiful community around the show. And it does help a lot of people, and they kind of, they do it in a comedic fashion, but they really are kind of helping their listeners through tough times. And they make sure that they respond in a positive way to their listeners. So I think, having that kind of a back and forth communication works really well. So, yeah, I mean, some people might try a few different tactics in terms of competitions, whatever it may be for people to enter. But I generally think just getting people to send in their thoughts and feelings and actually respond to it on the air works really well. Personally, I've had it done myself, and I got very excited when I heard my name pop up on a podcast when I was on the bus. So, I think that's a strong suit to do it. Like I said, podcast is very ran by emotions. So if you can tap into people's emotions, whether it be happy or sad emotions, you tend to do well.
And just a final question in closing for you. So you've talked through a number of different podcasts that you like and the concepts around them that help give me an understanding of different formats that can be experimented with. But in closing, are there any favorite podcasts that either you've produced at Q Podcasts or that you've just seen in the wild that really speak to this experimentation with format that you just really enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a few. I mean, even from our own podcast that we've done, first 3 years is a great piece of work that we're very proud of. And I think in terms of a few different podcasts that I've seen over the years that have done things differently, yeah, there's definitely a few to name, and there's definitely a few I'm going to forget that I personally love as well. But there's some fantastic production companies we have here in the UK, and I think it goes under, I think it's underseen, to be honest, especially compared to the big ones in America like Gimlet and NPR, etc. But Novel is a great production company, and they create a fantastic show called Futile Attempts with the host Kim Noble. Incredibly difficult to describe what it is, but essentially it's almost a scripted reality play by the host, where you're kind of listening to him engage with members of the public almost in a hit and mic fashion as he kind of goes through this wild, darkly comedic, disturbing story over, like, I think, 8 episodes. And I remember listening to it thinking this was one of the greatest pieces of podcasting I've heard before. It was very, very funny, very, very odd, but it was great. And then other ones, I suppose, is, there's a podcast that I've actually worked on and still do called Deep Roots with the adventurer Damien Brown. The last season, he was recording himself live as he was attempting to summit Mount Everest and sending back kind of these audio vlogs. And now he's actually in this summer about to attempt to solo row. It's not solo, he's doing it with a friend of his, but to row from New York to Galway. And once again, he's going to be recording himself on that journey and releasing the episodes as well while he's out there, so people can listen and follow along his, I think it might take 60, 70 days or even more to cross over. But that's quite an exciting, different format of podcasting, because also there's, with his past series, he was in Mount Everest and he caught COVID on base camp, which, people might think that's, how could that possibly happen? But it did, and it was an outbreak, and it was very, we're waiting with bated breath every morning to see how he's getting on, and it was very, very different. Another one as well that I'll just mention that I remember listening to years back called Cinemile. It's a great, great podcast. It was a film review podcast. I don't actually know if it's still going, but essentially it was a couple that go to the cinema, which was 1 mile away. And they would record themselves on that 1 mile walk back to the house, just reviewing the film. And it was just a simple, very simple idea, and it just worked really well. And that went on to win quite a lot of awards at the Podcast Awards in the UK. And like that, it doesn't always have to, when I say think differently and be creative and think outside the box, it doesn't have to be some elaborate, crazy kind of idea. It just has to sometimes be the simplest approach can often work. So yeah, I think there's multiple different ways. Immersive audio is another way you can be a bit different. And sketch comedy is one that I love to hear in podcasts. And especially just because of the way they're trying to sell characters through audio and use of sound design. So yeah, there's multiple different facets. I think it's very exciting at the moment. People are doing very different things. I think we are kind of trying to make sure that the shows that aren't just funded by big networks, with say big typical, your famous faces, interviewing over famous faces. You know, we want to make sure we're doing stuff that's still different. That podcasting is that kind of Wild West space that we can be creative and explore different avenues. And yeah, I think it's definitely still in a very exciting time. Podcasting, I think it's still only nearly in its infancy in terms of what's next. I think it's just going to keep growing and get bigger and bigger. And hopefully give a lot of people opportunities to create fantastic work.
I love the example of Cinemile. I've not heard of that, but we talked about budgets earlier and maybe what can cause budgets to need to be increased for the production quality. But also on the creativity side of things, some of the most creative podcasts are those that are just resourceful. So you gave the Cinemile one, and just people that are building podcasts around things that they already love and do. And the other one that comes to mind is Gossip Mongers, just because it's a very simple concept. You know, I don't know, again, production budgets and stuff like that, but when they first started out, very simple in theory to execute. So, some of the best creative examples of podcasting can actually just tend to be the most resourceful, in my experience at least, and based on some of the things that you've been discussing here as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think those ones always tend to rise a little bit to the top, especially, mm-hmm. I mean, if the people who are creating the work are entertaining and engaging, then 100%. And yeah, like I said, when it comes down to budget for brands, it doesn't always have to be these massively flashy kind of, I mean, if you go from, to give you an example, UK budgets compared to US budgets, I think, if you do a show like Serial or S-Town, I remember seeing that I think S-Town cost, $1.5 million to create. You know, that's crazy for the kind of level that UK podcasting's at. You know, it's nowhere near that. But that is an example of American, how they invest. And same goes with, you can see Spotify paying X amount of money for certain shows. You can see Amazon creating television shows from podcasts. So they're investing first in podcasts to be created and then almost testing them out to see if they'd work on television. It's a very unique space, definitely.
I wonder if we'll see the same from Netflix, like an experimental podcast platform. Yeah, I was just thinking it's weird that we haven't seen that yet. It makes a lot of sense, right?
It does. I actually heard that Netflix are getting into the podcast game. I hope they do. I mean, personally, I think more the merrier. I think Facebook attempted to, and then they just dropped out a few weeks back. I don't know how that was even going to work. I suppose they were going to be a hosting platform or provide, I don't know what they were going to do, but it didn't really last very long. But I mean, the more the merrier. I think the more money and more support we can get out there. My one main thing is that it's just to make sure that, we don't forget the grassroots of podcasting. It's people who can create their own shows and they can still rise to the top and they don't have to have $100,000 budgets to create these shows. Like you said, for example, that Cinemile one, if you've got a microphone and you can give great content and you've got a great idea, I hope that we can still have an environment where those people can still be heard. That's my only worry, is that, we'll flush those people out. And podcasting, like I said, as grassroots, that's what it is. It's people with great ideas that don't have a major network saying, don't do that. Don't talk about this. That's a terrible idea. Let's change it to this. Let's change the host, not you, to someone else. That's where podcasting's great. It's that kind of freedom. So I hope, obviously more money in the industry is great, but also let's not forget kind of what the main power podcasting has, which is giving those voices to people. It's great.
And for the people that want to be heard and want to find you and have their voices heard, where can they find out more about you and Q Podcasts?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So you can visit our website. It's qpodcast.com. You can, I suppose, connect with me on LinkedIn. It's Niall Killeany Taylor. It's a tricky one to spell. But good luck. If you can find me, connect with me and get in touch. And same goes for any of our other platforms. So podcast.co, radio.co, and matchmaker.fm. But I would shout out on my Instagram, but it's mainly just pictures of pints and stuff like that. So I don't know if it's too interesting for businesses.
Stick to LinkedIn maybe for now.
I think stick, exactly, yeah. LinkedIn's probably my best bet.
No, it's been a pleasure talking podcasting with you, and all that's left to say is take care. This has been the Internet Marketing Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.